As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Oh my God, this company should have died like 5 times.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter.
Today we talked with Perry Blake Gorman. She's the founder of Archively and one of the co-founders of Unroll.me. And she talks about how she went from being a headhunter on Wall Street to a solo non-technical startup founder. Really, really interesting journey. And she also shares with us her process for building relationships that pay off in the long game. Really great chat with Perry.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Perry Gorman, the founder of Archively and one of the co-founders of Unroll.me. Perry, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about getting started with Unroll.me.
Well, I'll take you a little bit back further than that. So I had a 13 plus year career as a headhunter on Wall Street. And I kind of got to the top of the business and just realized like I was kind of unfulfilled. I met a guru in Bali. Like there's a whole story like that, Eat, Pray, Love-ish kind of thing, where I quit my job and spent, you know, a year traveling and kind of figuring out what I wanted to do with my life. As it turned out, I kind of got into the startup scene through beta testing other things and being like, oh, wow, this is great. And, oh, wow, there's a lot of things out there that aren't very good. And sorry, but it's true. And I kind of thought to myself, oh, okay, well, what problems do I have? And funny enough, I had this situation where I was supposed to see like my uncle and his email got buried in all these subscriptions that I had had in Gmail. And I was really upset about it. It was like just kind of a missed connection that shouldn't have been. And I went and I was like, what is there that can help me unsubscribe? This is like the most painful thing ever. And most of the things I saw like unsubscribe.com was still around then was, you know, there were like the one button clicks, but it was more, I wanted more than that. I wanted the whole experience of what is in my inbox? Like, what am I actually subscribed to? So that's kind of like the beginning of it. And then at Startup Poker, as you do, I met Josh Rosenwald, who's the CEO of Unroll Me now. And we talked about it. He was working on a bunch of different things, and we sort of partnered and founded it together. And it was a good match, right? Because he had already partnered with a couple of friends who were product and engineering, and I had the marketing piece and the idea. And so that's kind of how it started.
And, so,
yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, so you are now with Archively a solo non-technical founder.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how you got the ball rolling, because you're also self-funded, as I understand.
So I'm angel funded now, but I started out self-funded. I mean, the thing about Unroll Me that was great for me was that it was like my startup training wheels kind of situation where I proved to myself that I could get something out there. Like the experience of getting Unroll Me kind of off the ground and like into visibility, gave me like, oh wow, maybe I can actually do this. So, I was not actually very passionate about email. In fact, I hate email. So moving on to do something in an area that I'm more passionate about, I actually spent a lot of time thinking about Archively. You know, I'm not a kid. I'm 35 years old, and I wanted to do something that I could do for long haul. And I wanted to do something in the space and domain that I spent my career on. So Archively is basically like Evernote about people, and it allows you to build dossiers about people as you're researching online. So it's really built for recruiters and sourcers. But there are a bunch of other There are a bunch of other use cases for it too. And no, we're not a search engine, and we're not meant to automate everything. We're actually meant to capture all the information as people who do this as a process. A lot of people, you know, store it in spreadsheets, et cetera. So I took all my money that I had in my bank account and I moved to California. I had a friend out here who gave me good advice, but it was sort of like you just go into VCs and pitch with your pitch deck, and they were $2 million kind of advice. And strangely enough, like of course that didn't happen, but it also didn't happen, and I'm kind of glad it didn't. I think I've learned a lot bootstrapping and taking small angel money. I think I've made a lot of decisions that I think actually I would have ruined the company if I had taken money early. I had to get so tight on my vision of Archively because I just didn't have the resources to overbuild. And I'm a non-technical founder, so it's not like I was sitting in my bedroom just coding away for months and months and months. I had to be really, really clear about how I was spending all my, you know, my personal money, et cetera. I definitely learned how to be scrappy and to like make good resource decisions and be really, really, really careful about who you work with, how much they're charging you, and like what you get for that. I think that was one of the best lessons that I had from that. And then I raised money. And I don't know, that didn't feel as hard as some of the other parts.
So before you raised the money, how long was that time period when you were bootstrapping?
Well, you know, like for half of it, like, I mean, I guess I've been doing it for like, I mean, I came up with the idea like 2 years ago, but I didn't really start building it And I guess I started building it like a year ago or so. And I think for a while I was just trying to figure it out, right? I spent months and months and months trying to find a co-founder. Like everyone says you need, you know, a technical co-founder. And then I finally was like, screw it. Like I'm doing this anyway. So I need to just figure out how I'm going to move forward. So, say your question again. I lost myself.
How long were you bootstrapping for?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I bootstrapped for like 8 or 9 months, but technically I wasn't working for a year. I wasn't really necessarily, it wasn't a company yet, right? It was just an idea and I was out here networking and trying to figure things out.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
And then you gave up on finding a technical co-founder. So what was the alternative?
So I've had a friend who had just like 500 startups. Like he had a startup that failed, and he was like, he's like, you're really passionate about this and I just want to help you. So like we started and he helped me start to prototype it. And, you know, I did more research and it was sort of like just taking a long time. I was talking to a lot of customers. And then I finally was getting to the end of my own personal runway. I was like, you know what? I need to raise money. And so I did. And so I raised like a small amount of angel money and then had this team that I put together. And then there was like massive disaster, like personal, like God, wrath of God kind of stuff happened to my team. And I'm not even going to get into it. It was like terrible. Like one of those things where you're kind of like, is this a message from God that I'm supposed to give up now? And so that happened. And then I had to make some decisions. You know, I didn't have $1 million. I had limited resources. And so at that point I decided, okay, you know what? I still don't have a full-time engineer and I'm just going to give this whole product a facelift. I'm just going to redo it. I'm going to make it gorgeous. I'm going to make it responsive. And so, I actually used Unroll Me's designer out of London, these awesome guys called Simple as Milk. They're an agency. And we just cleaned it up and redid it and took it out of prototype form. And it was the best decision I ever made to do that because that is when people started to get it. Like there was a way that like when I started to talk to engineers, they were just sort of like, oh, I see it now. And so that was a really important decision. It also financially let me kind of fake it until I could get the technology right. And then I had, this is a good part. I had half a month of runway left and I was like, oh, you know, this is, do you guys remember my article? Fuck it, ship it.
Yeah. I read that.
Matt and Matt's post inspired me to write that. I had like almost no runway left. I was in negotiations with this guy to come on as a co-founder and he ultimately went to go do something else. And I hired a dev shop, which, you know, could go one way or the other to basically integrate my front end and my back end. And I was like, you guys need to have this done in 2 weeks. And we just did it. And then a couple of my original investors were like, you know, we'll bridge you. And then I raised more money and then just like figured it out. It sounds like a crazy, it is crazy. And then I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not spending any more money until I have a full-time engineer. And I spent like another 2 months looking for a full-time engineer. And in the meantime, I was like, I also want to make money. And so I came up with a way to make money, and here we are.
So let's talk about that for a minute. How did you start to make money before the product was ready for prime time? And what kind of conversations were you having? You said you were out there for months just talking to potential customers. How'd those conversations evolve into this kind of pre-sales?
Well, so the thing is, like, you know, the difference between me and a lot of people who build products is that, like, I really was the user, right? I actually, every time I talk to potential customers, like, I know their pain because I worked in the industry for 13 years. There are very few people that come from the recruiting industry that build products. And, you know, a lot of times people are coming in to the recruitment space because it's just so hot and it's so terrible of a problem, and it's like a huge market. And so it's not like I was, it's, how do I want to say this? Like, I'm learning like a ton from, I was originally talking to a lot of recruiters. Where the interesting story here is that this happened, like my first client happened because I like hustled my way into the founders party in Dublin. I ended up meeting the CTO of this company, and we were sitting there talking, and we had a drink when we came back because he's like, you know, for a non-technical founder, I'm really impressed with you. And I was like, oh my God, thank God an engineer of some merit thinks that I'm interesting. And I was like, maybe he has some friends. And so we were talking about me finding an engineer, and he was like, do you know any good recruiters? And I said, you don't need a recruiter. I'm like, engineers don't even want to talk to recruiters. I said, what you need is awesome pipelining. And then I'm like, it was kind of that eureka moment. And I was like, we can do that for you. And we can do it for you in our product, right? So we actually have become like the user of our product, and we deliver research to these clients in our product. It's interesting, and they get it, and they hired someone already, like in the first couple months of working with us, and now we're using this example with them to figure out the way the collaborative part of the product is going to work. So it's interesting. I mean, I'm learning a lot now.
Where are you finding your leads from? Where are you getting new clientele from?
So I am a networker. So here's the thing. Like, I built this product because this is what I do. Like, I research people. Like, I stalk people for years. I know that sounds really creepy, but it's true. And really actually what it is that I don't wait until I need something to create relationships with people. I do it as a practice. And actually, like, that is what, like, Archively was born out of, was the idea that you keep track of people, and you continuously do due diligence so that you're in the know on people. And that way, when you come to a point of needing something, you're like, you're there. New business is not like, so the other thing is, like, I'm a salesperson. I'm a recruiter. Like, this is actually not the hard part for me. I just kind of go out there and tell people what I do and put it together in a package that makes it like where they can say yes. And like, maybe I'll do a free sample for them if they're interested. But, I think for me as a non-technical founder, like, getting the skills to be able to, like, put my understanding of a market and vision into technology has been the harder part, and getting an engineer to trust my vision and be on board and see it too. That's challenging. Yeah.
So for some of us that aren't kind of natural networkers, can you give us any insight into what you're doing to kind of keep up with people? Is it reading news? Are you writing them a monthly email just to touch base with them? What are you doing to always kind of be up to date?
So I do, you know, you do one thing like you do everything. So the way I network is the same way that I headhunt. And basically, It's high touch. It's very high targeted, and it's not, and I spend a lot of energy and attention on people in the sense that, it's not this like shallow spray and pray kind of thing. I think also being on sites like Twitter and posting business stuff on Facebook and having enough of a network in those places allows for a daily familiarity to build with people that you might not know well. So that's like one piece of it. And then actually going and having meaningful conversations with people over time, and knowing that you may not actually ever do business with this person. Like, I think a lot of people think like, oh, when I'm selling or oh, when I'm recruiting or networking, like I need to figure out what they're going to do for me or why this is valuable. Or people will be like, why should I meet with this person? And it's like, if you just keep meeting with people, eventually it starts to pay off.
Interesting. So when you meet with someone, are you, how do I say this? Are you following up with them regularly, or is it kind of a one touch and now they're in your, you know, box?
I think it depends. I definitely kind of have this sort of, you know, once every 6 months, I'll kind of reinvigorate a relationship. But I think that what I try to do is make the first contact of like whatever I have a contact of someone that it's powerful enough. Maybe I've made an introduction for them that's meaningful or something that sticks, right? Like something where you're like, oh, this person will take my call again, or they'll meet with me again, or they'll help me if I need it. And then you don't need to do as much kind of tilling of the soil later. But I think that if you only see people when you need them, that's what they associate your calls with, as opposed to the other way around.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that, you know, networking and keeping up relationships with people seems like it should be this really natural thing. But people really tend to struggle with it, especially in kind of the tech world where a lot of people are more comfortable in front of their computer screen, building something that is going to be perfect when it's released. And your article, Fuck It, Ship It, and your whole approach to talking to people and networking, is something that I think we can all take a lesson from, for sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, it's really, I found this article that I wrote a couple of years ago, in a magazine, and it was basically, I had deconstructed how I network. And I realize it's like, you know, if you know how to walk, trying to teach someone how to walk, it's actually kind of hard to deconstruct something for a beginner. Sales and finding new business, I think the biggest thing, the other piece of advice that I would give people is that it's about getting the person to say yes to something. Like recruiting, like all these people that send job positions through email, like it's laughable to me. No one is going to take your email from someone they've never heard of before with selling you a job position and be like, oh yeah, I totally am ready to leave my job. I want that job. Like that's ridiculous. Nobody does that. It's like, oh, hey, I'd love to connect with you. I thought that project that you worked on was really interesting. Love to introduce myself. Can we talk? And then like if they're a normal human being and you've somehow appealed to something that's interesting, or you've flattered them. People love to be flattered. If you say something nice about them in the email, they generally respond. That's another trick. if you tell people, wow, you know, that was so awesome. They do respond. And really like it's people are in such a rush. It's like, you're in such a rush to close a deal that like you kind of turn people off from the sale before they've even actually heard your pitch. Or same thing with recruiting. They're all the same. Recruiting is the same as sales, is the same as networking, is the same as probably getting investors and, you know, all like it's all kind of the same.
Right. And when you call something networking or recruiting, it kind of sounds like a dirty word. But if you just say, oh, it's relationship building, you know, all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's how I want to do business.
Well, and everybody else. And then you come to Silicon Valley and you're like, no, we're going to automate that. you know, automate relationship building.
So I
just like, you know, I'm kind of a counter, you know.
Yeah.
I believe in people. I believe people still exist.
Yeah. So before we wrap up here, you've been working on Archively now for, did you say about 18 months?
Yeah.
18 months or 2 years?
Yeah. No, 18. I mean, 2 years I've had the idea, but like it takes a long time.
It does. It takes a very long time. So I guess looking back over those past 18 months, what we usually ask everyone we interview is, what would you do differently if you could go back and change something?
God, I don't know. You know, I'm a journey person. I'm a journeysman. I kind of believe that you need to have gone through all the things that you went through in order to get to where you are now. And so I'm not sure if I would have changed anything. I also like, and this is just a sideline, like I have done more work on like my internal self, like to be able to also catch up with the company too, to like be ready to like do it full out. And, I don't know. I don't think I'd change anything. I think I like to suffer.
Can you talk about any of the work that you're doing personally to kind of get ready to be a founder?
So when I met this guru in Bali, a number of years ago, his whole, it's very Buddhist. It's all like kind of Buddhist-y spiritual stuff, but really it's the whole dissection of fears and beliefs. So chances are like, if you look at founders who continue to survive, there are people that like, when they hit a brick wall, they find the magic door. And the only way that you find the magic door is if you can somehow like twist your belief system to say like, no, that's possible. I'm walking through that door, you know, or I'm walking through that wall. And really like you have to have enough faith. I know this sounds so like woo woo and weird, but like it's actually not about analytics or data or anything like that. It's about like how many belief systems and programs that you grew up with telling you things had to be a certain way or they should be this way. How many of those things can you let go of so that you can actually do what's possible? Sorry, it's like super deep. But like, yeah, it's just constantly sitting and evaluating and being like, oh, I'm doing this because I'm afraid of this, or I'm not doing this because I believe this strongly. And it's like, well, why do I believe that? Oh, because my parents told me that.
Wow, yeah. So that goes pretty deep then.
Yeah, it's like, I'm actually super, super deep. My startup is the catalyst for my own spiritual awakening. But really, yeah. I mean, if you look at it like that, then it's kind of like a game, right? And it's like, whatever happens, if I'm meant to fail, I'll fail and it will have been a beautiful lesson. But it's like, oh, if I'm not, then it'll just keep going. And there have been, oh my God, this company should have died like 5 times.
Yeah. And it kind of just reminds you like why you're doing what you're doing. I think for some reason that's very easy to forget. So if you can remind yourself why you're doing what you're doing every once in a while, I think it goes a long way.
I mean, I have those moments every day too, like where I looked at my engineer this morning and I was like, I'm doing it wrong. And he's like, no, find your true north again. And it's like, and I do, I have to remember, okay, like this is why I'm building this. And like, I will not be distracted by my own self-doubt. So it happens, right? It's hard.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on here. For everyone listening, where can we keep up with you?
I respond to everyone on Twitter. So be the butterfly. B-E, that's a whole other story. B-E-T-H-E, butterfly on Twitter. But yeah, and I totally respond to people because I think it's really rude when people don't respond to people on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, thanks so much for coming on, Perry.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Hope this was educational.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you haven't yet, pop open iTunes and subscribe to be notified of future episodes. We have some really great ones lined up.
And while you're there, leave us a review. We really appreciate each and every one of them. I'm a in a city with a traveling man. Tears in her eyes, she said it's just really goodbye. I said, I'm leaving. Cool.
much. In a city, traveling land. Don't cry, wipe the tears in her eyes. She said it's just really goodbye. I said, I'm leaving.
We're gonna go and do something. How we did not too long ago. Did have requests for this, so we had to do it.
Go ahead and leave the call heard around the world from the wise of MCs. These cats is paying more than half a pound. My garment back and snatch it down. I got to skate, but we could probably run them back in town. Scenarios like this is tearjerkers for the modern MC. I eat a blue collar worker because this thing called rhyming no different from coal mining. We both on assignment to unearth the diamond. When you start climbing and them eyes start shining, you be struggling and striving and they think you prime diamond. Maintain it, keep silent, make no an observation. It's confrontation. This is the daily operation. My concentration, stay focused on my recitation. About to reach my destination with no pause or hesitation. Baby, make the preparation, cause this ain't no recreation. This is pro ball, and we letting you know, y'all. At the show, y'all, doing this for dough, y'all. Get the phone call, and I'm ready to blow, y'all. About to go, y'all, been a pleasure to know, y'all. And I'm letting you know, I'm leaving. I'm a in the city, traveling man. I'm leaving. Smoking greenery, easily.